This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the morning run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Joyce Goh here with me, also Tan Chung Han.
Good morning.
Selamat pagi.
Oh, selamat pagi. Oh. Selamat pagi, cikgu. 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 3rd of October. Now, some news overnight. We had the Nobel Prize in Physics has been awarded to a woman for the first time in 55 years. So Donna Strickland from Canada, she's the, the third woman to have won this award. Marie Curie won it in 1903 and Maria Goeppert-Mayer won it in 1963.
Yeah, so Maria Goeppert-Mayer was honored in 1963 for her work on the nuclear shell structure. Now, I think in this case, Donna Strickland, she was awarded for, she shares this year's prize with Arthur Ashkin from the US and Gerard Moreau from France, and it recognizes their discoveries in the field of laser physics.
Physics, man. So an achievement for women worldwide.
Yeah, you know, and to get really technical here, it's like optical tweezers. Yeah. Is that what it is?
I have no idea what it is. But, you know, with the Nobel Prizes, almost always we look at just the Peace Prize, right? We only know who won the Peace Prize every year. That will be awarded on Friday. And apparently the bookies seem to think that Kim Jong-un and his South Korean counterpart could win this year because of their work to resolve tensions.
Oh. Well, I mean,
but bookies have famously been wrong when it comes to the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, well, not taking anything away from Dr. Strickland, right? Now, her getting this award in 2018 was even marked by some controversy, right? Because just a few days prior, there was another physicist who gave this highly offensive lecture saying that physics had been built by men. So, once again, showing not just the rarity of women winning the Nobel Prize for Physics, but also yet in 2018, they're still having to contend with such sexist remarks.
I think for that guy, he was asked to leave, I think, the research center. But coming back to the winners this year, I think the American Institute of Physics offered their congratulations and says that, you know, what they found, right, what they've discovered, what it helps with is like laser eye surgery. Mm. Also the ability to trap and study individual viruses and bacteria.
There you go. Mm. Well, speaking about Wonder Woman, we have PepsiCo's CEO Indira Nui. She, was present at PepsiCo's earnings and that marked her last day. So it was quite the swan song. PepsiCo delivered better than expected third quarter earnings with a 16% surge in profits. So this, I think, was a particular victory for New Year's, particularly the beverage business, which returned to growth. And she had, I think, been facing a lot of pressure to sell or to spin off the beverage side of the business.
Yeah, I think she had a really good run after 12 years at the helm, right, of PepsiCo. And I think she was also instrumental in restructuring and diversifying that soft drink brand into, I think they went into healthier snack food.
Tea. They went into really healthy tea, yes.
Yeah, so that helped the company. Yeah, you said that she was under a lot of pressure to split the group, but it looks like not splitting the group helped with the earnings.
Yeah, well, earnings aside, though, looking at how their share prices performed overnight, well, PepsiCo actually was down 1.8%. Ah. You couple that with the 1% decline that they saw on Monday there. In fact, over the last, couple of weeks or so, they've only seen one day of gains since September 21st, September 20th, really. So, yeah, perhaps shareholders having a different take on matters there.
Well, you know, what's also interesting is Indra Nui stepping down is really, I think, there seems to be a bit of a trend across corporate America lately. So she's stepping down. She's being replaced by Ramon LaGuarta, who's a man. And over the past year, we've seen five other women in top companies around America being replaced, stepping down and being replaced by men. So we've got Mondelez, we've got Campbell Soup Company, Mattel, Avon and HP, all stepping down, all replaced by men. So as a result, fewer than 5% of companies on the S&P 500 now have female CEOs.
I wonder what happened. Could it be because the lack of other females that are rising up?
But why this last year have we had such an exodus of female CEOs?
Right, you know, and once again, the structural barriers there in the C-suites, not just in corporate America, but, you know, I dare assume across the world as well. Mm. So, you know, this is the theme that we're addressing this morning, right? On one hand, the rarity of women to win Nobel Prizes in physics, and in this case also trying to break that glass ceiling there. And the gains that were made, you know, previously now seems to be taking a step back given the high-profile departures of these women CEOs.
Yeah, and once they've broken that glass ceiling, hun, keeping them there as well is another problem.
Yeah, it's tough. I think what people are saying is that, you know, the solution when it comes to C-suites is it starts at the boardroom. Because they choose the chief executives and they have a say.
So you make sure the boardroom is not just filled with men. All right. After this, we're going to take a look at flat hierarchy companies. Does the egalitarianism come at a price? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 3rd of October. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Go and Tan Chung Han. Great tune there by the Supremes and the Four Tops, River Deep and Mountain High. What is not River Deep and Mountain High is the flatness of some corporate structures. Bit of a stretch there. But some companies around the world, most companies around the world exist with some form of hierarchy. And it's usually one of those vertical structures. You know, you have the top management and then everything trickles down from the top. But there's also another form of company structure, the flat hierarchy. It's usually championed by tech startups, you know, of the like. This principle of where you're your own boss. But the question we're asking this morning is, does it work? Now, we aim to answer that question on today's show of the BBC Business Daily. That's happening after the 9:30 news later this morning. And here's a teaser of what's coming up on the show.
It means that there's no one who just sits around all day thinking about what other people should do or telling other people what to do. So even for Jason and I, Jason's the CEO, I'm the CTO. We have a lot of managerial responsibilities, but they're sort of a part-time job. I spend the bulk of my time either writing, doing marketing for the company, or doing programming. My favorite things to do. There are teams that have designated team leads, but they all do the work as well. And the managerial responsibilities they have is a minority part of their job description.
You just heard that the Basecamp founder and CTO, David Heinmeier Hansen, explaining how his company operates using the flat hierarchy structure. What do you guys think? I mean, I'm going to ask you, for instance, because you've worked in a traditional newsroom where you have that very vertical structure. You've got the editor-in-chief and then you've got your senior editors and everything comes from the top, right? And then you're working now at BFM, which is a relatively flat structure. Well, what's been some of the biggest changes for you?
I think it's to a certain extent, the structure could be just there, but sometimes in certain companies, like at the Edge, you could be a writer, but you can still go straight to the EIC or go straight to the senior editor to talk or have story ideas. The door is not closed. So they kind of have an open door policy.
Right.
You can just
walk
in.
Even though it's vertical, it's quite open.
Yeah, but of course, there's that hierarchy where you go to your editor and you discuss like stories, or the editor gives out assignments. Like you have to go out and cover the assignments. At BFM, it's relatively flat where there's just your team lead and then there's the boss, right? Mm. But then there's still, to a certain extent, sometimes you also have to a report, in a way, to a team lead.
How do you think it works, the flat hierarchy?
Look, I mean, certainly here at BFM, you know, given the close to 2 years that I've been here, I feel empowered to be able to contribute more meaningfully, right, as opposed to having those gatekeepers at the top, you know, give their blessing and get permission from them. I get that. Now, this flat hierarchy, though, is dependent on individuals, having individuals who work there, being able to take the initiative, right? They're skilled enough to make those informed decisions, not just any decision, but an informed decision. That is a key criteria because I've worked in other places before.
There's flat?
There's a hierarchy and there are individuals there who just if you don't tell them what to do, they'll just sit there and they won't do anything.
Oh, so no initiative. So you need to have a kind of direction, right? So someone, I guess, with authority saying, okay, now you have to do this, and you don't question that authority.
And it's mind-numbing, though. You have to handhold these individuals in their 30s, 40s, even 50s and say, all right, honey, like, do this part.
Honey.
Press this button.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, no, I'm telling you, it was so, so frustrating, though. So, you know, that's why, you know, making this transition into other organizations that are flatter and again, a key component here being having skilled colleagues there makes a world of a difference.
I think not so much about skilled, but having teammates who think like leaders, right? So so not followers, but leaders.
Yeah. Also, do you think with the whole flat structure, do you think it could be a fad with some companies because it's younger, the whole...
Millennials want empowerment.
So you talk to... I mean, my friends, younger, they're some of them are looking to shift towards like an open concept kind of layout for offices. You know, they're looking at... even a more flat structure, less hierarchy, because they think that younger people who are joining the workforce, they like that.
Well, I think you have a point, Joyce. I think that the younger generation may... I mean, what the younger generation tend to want is more flexibility, more accountability as well. So, you know, you feel free to do what you need to do. I'm not going to micromanage you. And I think that works for a lot of younger people. So perhaps, you know, with the tech companies and the startup culture... the flat hierarchy really works. But where it fails is when you need someone to take accountability for something, right?
Right, exactly. You know, because when somebody messes up, there's a who's to blame? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not in charge. Now, it also depends on the industry, right? So for tech startups, sure, right? Again, it's, you know, higher up the value chain, and you would think that people who gravitate towards that, you know, can... take the initiative, right? As opposed to needing that handheld. But if, let's say, that young person... joins one of the big four audit firms, they can't just go simply audit people they want. And they can. Yeah. There's no, there are systems and processes in place. You know? So it's very much dependent on the kind of people and the kind of industry and the kind of skills that are required there.
I think it boils down at the end of the day to the culture of the company as well. You can have hierarchy or not, because in the Forbes article that I have in front of me, they say even flat organizations, it could work, but there are also informal hierarchies to some, in some companies.
Yeah, so some leaders that are kind of de facto leaders.
But
right?
There is not.
It's not, but you're not given that title. I also think that, you know, it's a way, you're right, Han, it depends on the setting and the industry, because in this kind of flat structure, you're responsible for each other's work. Mm. So you're always capable of what the other person has to do, because you know, you're directly responsible for their work and they're directly responsible for yours. And there's a shared sense, there's a sense of shared responsibility.
Yeah,
right?
But I must say that there are instances or places where I worked at where there is a very strong hierarchy and it works tremendously well. So on film sets, all right, you got a very strong hierarchy, you do not cross over to someone else's line, you don't overstep your mark, and it works like a charm. You got 200 people there, everybody knows which wire they can touch, where they're supposed to...
No, and the boss is the director.
Well, no, for my department was the assistant director, so we were accountable to the studio. We made sure everybody did their job on time and make sure they clocked in, got their meals, and everything worked.
The money side.
So if you didn't know, Han worked on this little show called One Tree Hill previously. Just a small little show. No one's heard of that show.
Yeah, long time ago. This is a previous life.
Do you think, though, that it will create territorial behavior?
Well, don't come my territory.
Yeah. You know.
But on the flip side, it also encourages ownership, right? Mm. You own your jobs and responsibilities.
Okay, all right. Well, tell us what you think. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Do you think the flat hierarchy structure works and is sustainable? This is a question that we're going to try and answer on the BBC World Service today after the 9:30 news. But coming up next, we have a look at how our school years can define us. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Hello, good morning. It's coming up to 6:22 right now. You're with Joyce Han and me, Mel, on the morning run. And we've just heard from Dr. Liana Khairuddin, who agrees with you, Han, about the flat hierarchy structure of certain businesses. She says it depends on the nature of the business, because some businesses favor that sort of hierarchy. You too can join the conversation at any point in time. We're at BFM Radio, that's our Twitter handle, or you can text in anytime at 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. Now, we're taking a look at what happened over the weekend. There was one of the oldest schools in KL, Victoria Institution. It held its 125th anniversary dinner. And the guest of honour that night was Tommy Thomas, the Attorney General. And during his speech, he revealed that he was quite mischievous during his secondary school days at VI. And he said that my role in the school was to be a naughty student full of mischief who spent a lot of time in detention class. So I guess the question is whether, you know, I mean, he's come so far. He was introduced, I believe, as the whale hunter. Because of the 1MD with
right,
the whale.
Okay.
So, whether or not I think we've let our school years define us, having, you know, I'm sure we were all different people in high school.
God forbid. God, no. I mean, if I were to let my school years define me.
What were you like in school?
Well, okay, to be honest, I was quite the nerd. I really was.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I know. I was a nerd.
What makes you think you've got any different?
Wow. Hey, you girls go on with this conversation.
Hey,
I'm heading out for a while.
Nerds are cool.
Nerds are the new cool.
Yeah, nerds are cool now, but back then, like, nerds weren't that cool. I was a bit of a teacher's pet as well. So, yeah, I mean, I would like to think that I've gotten a lot more street smart since then.
Okay. More worldly. So what the idea of not letting our school years define us, I think, you know, it comes with kind of personal growth, right? And when we say how our school years define us, it's also, you know, how our teachers define us, right? How our peers define us. And everyone feels like they need to, I guess, be justified
validated.
Validated is the word. Thank you. Validated by friends and by our social circle. So who you are in high school is not necessarily, or secondary school is not necessarily who you'll grow up to be. But there are, I guess, characteristics that will never change, right? So, for instance, if you are generally someone who is a joker, likes to be the class clown, center of attention, that's kind of the, you know, you can see the trajectory of where you're going later in life.
Or whether if you're introvert or an extrovert, I think that kind of doesn't change. But as you grow older, as you mature, your thinking matures and all that. But that characteristics, as you say, Melissa, that stays. But I think it's also important when in school that teachers, be it, and relatives and all, they don't write off or the kid
or label you.
Important, because when you're a kid or when you're in school, as you can see, look at Tommy Thomas, he's saying that, you know, he spent a lot of time in detention class, he's saying he's playing pranks all the time, and he's aging now.
So I, in school, I was quite invisible. I was middling. You know, I was in a class of 30 and I was invisible to teachers, and I felt that way. So I guess, you know, you don't realize when you think people write you off because, you know, you're just mediocre. I wouldn't use the word mediocre, but, you know, you're not excellent, right? So the attention is always paid to the top 5%, top 10 of the class, and the bottom 10 because you're struggling. But the middle, I'm the M40. I was the M40 of my class.
I think that's why it's important not to label and write kids or even high schoolers off.
Yeah, that's true. Well, tell us what you think. If your secondary school days define you, or if you've moved away from who you are in high school, our number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up next. And to take you there, Young Blood by The Naked and Famous, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Hello and good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Joyce Han and me, Melissa. If you've just joined us, welcome. Quick shout out to Carl Chin on Twitter. We were talking a little bit about Tommy Thomas saying that he was the naughtiest boy in a class when he was in secondary school. And Carl Chin is saying that normally the top students become professionals who end up working for the naughty fella in class.
This ties in with what Jack Ma's approach is to education as well. You know, this statement by Jack Ma, you know, there's been his rounds on the internet. He says, you know, you don't need to be in the top three in your class. Being in the middle is fine, so long as your grades aren't too bad. Why? because only this kind of person, that's a middle of the road student, has enough free time to learn other skills. Mm. That's Jack Ma's approach.
I don't feel so bad now.
But then the caveat here is this, right? It's those students at the top of the class that has perhaps more surety when it comes to career prospects. Middle and M40 and B40, well, you've got to take on a bit more risk and try to figure out, you know, where you're going to go in life after that.
Not just career, but also scholarship prospects.
Exactly, yeah.
That's right. Well, join our conversation this morning. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us like Carl did. Our handle is at BFM Radio. Let's talk about class now, guys. Not like school class, but the social class. It was a topic of a huge survey or study in Singapore by Dr. Janil Puthucheary, the chairman of OnePeople.sg. It's a national body promoting harmony. They worked with Channel News Asia for this, and they responded more than 1,000 respondents in Singapore. What they found was quite uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable reality to deal with in Singapore, that income inequality has become the biggest social divide there. So the question I think that was posed by this finding was whether people believed that Singapore is a city of opportunity where they can make it as long as they work hard, or whether education there is still the social leveler that it's touted to be. And unfortunately, they found that it wasn't. So class is really the biggest divide, the working class really being the one that's been looked down on in Singapore.
Yeah, so it's more of a haves and the haves not, right? And also they look at, you know, most researchers, they define class by income, housing type and education. But I think people can make class markers out of anything, because from the way people speak, I think that's what they found in this article. They're saying, right, to even the way they dress.
Yeah, this is a fascinating study, guys. The question is whether we as Malaysians can relate to this.
Oh, certainly, because the issue of the growing inequality between the haves and the have-nots, you know, that is a trend that we're seeing all around the world, both in developed and developing countries as well. Looking at the Gini coefficient, for example, you know, here in Malaysia, the inequality, the income inequality between races, that has actually narrowed. But the income inequality within...
intra-race.
Yeah, intra-race, so that is growing. So income inequality, that is a trend that, you know, many societies and, by extension, governments have to contend with.
Yeah, so one of the things that the study found, and they made it into a documentary, you can find that on Channel News Asia, one of the things the study found was that the working class was especially looked down upon in Singapore. So waiters, security guards, cleaners, salespeople. They interviewed one McDonald's cleaner, and she said, "I know I'm invisible. I have to get used to this and learn to stop caring." Mm. Another security guard that they interviewed, he said, well, people think a security guard is a low-class job. They say, you're just a security guard. But why? Because work is work, right?
Mm. Yeah, well, work is work. But then, you know, I'm going to assume, and I hope I don't offend any Singaporeans out there, but and this kind of mentality is evident in many societies as well, not just Singapore. But, you know, the idea is, if you use that lens whereby an individual's worth is determined by how productive he or she is
productive,
in the society.
Productive. So most researchers define class by income level, by where you live, so housing type, and by education level, right?
Yeah. So income levels are not perhaps commensurate with the productivity or the what kind of output or what kind of job you're involved in, right? You know, so yeah, again, that lens is very common, especially for those who are more materialistic, if I can use a different term, you know, and that's why they, you know, feel that they have the platform to then look down on other people.
Well, I find this interesting because they also talk in this article, they also spoke to students from different streams. So you have like the integrated program and you have the normal streams. And there's this quote from one of the academic students from the normal stream who says that most of the people in the express stream look down on us.
Yeah.
So already in school, there's this divide already created there.
I also want to point out what you just said. I thought it was a great point that some people, yeah, while you use those, you know, specific markers, say the researchers use the income levels, education, housing place as class markers, I guess the intangibles would be how we define, how some people define class in terms of how you speak, your language, your accent, the way you dress, the people you mingle with. And those are all kind of subconscious class markers, right?
Right. But I think, you know, those markers are slowly being eroded, right? So, for example, you look at Zuckerberg, and he is totally just wearing the t-shirt and jeans all the time. You know.
But I'm sure at first glance, someone making a snap judgment or a first impression wouldn't think he was, you know, head of one of the biggest companies in the world.
Right, exactly. So the idea is to try and normalize, you know, and trying to erode that kind of marker, right? You go across Silicon Valley, you know, and you see that kind of dress code. They actually frown upon the suit and ties, you know, almost.
Yeah, but you see, this is the dangers when it comes to labeling as well, because in this one of this other normal stream student, he says that, you know, when asked whether he has friends in Express Stream, he says, you know, they don't usually hang out because in course, he says, they're very quiet and neat in school, not like us, we usually create chaos.
So he tell me.
Look, it sounds very, you know, egalitarian that, oh, we don't use social classes, we don't label people. But the reality is that is a coping.
It happens.
It happens and it's a coping mechanism for societies to function. That's if you subscribe to the functionalist view.
Okay, so then what can be done to facilitate more mixing among people of different social classes? Because the way the divide grows wider is when there is absolutely no intermingling.
Yeah, look, I mean, the commonality here is that you should have respect. I think that's a given. But in terms of labeling and all that, that's a pretty natural phenomenon. Like, you know, you see that happening all over there. Now, labeling can be positive, can be negative as well. But, you know, to my understanding in reading some sociology books, is that it is a coping mechanism that various segments of societies have to navigate the different phenomena that you see in society.
I also think that, you know, it's quite interesting to take a look at the fact that in this survey, 92% of people said that if you were able, 98%, almost 100%, said that if you were able to speak good English, you were considered upper class. If you tended to plan ahead and are domineering, you are considered upper class. And perceptions of low class is that you tend to speak Singlish, and people who thought they were friendly for lower class.
And we can put that to the test right now. If I were to abandon all forms of proper grammar and just speak simply la, right? Here on BFM. How would you, I mean, ask yourself this question. How would you then judge as presenters? Are you able to look past the semantics or the lack thereof and then just focus on the content? Or are you having to filter the content via these perceptions, these markers, proper grammar, proper English, you know, all that kind of stuff, proper temperament?
Great question. Yeah. Great question. Tell us. We'd love to hear from you. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll come back and take a look at your responses. Also, we have a new mayor for KL. We'll take a closer look at who he is. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, New Light by John Mayer. Hello, you're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. It's coming up to 6:53 right now. Thank you, everyone, for weighing in on our conversation. We have a number of responses this morning. I just want to say thank you to Azmil Yunor, the multi-talented artist who wrote in this morning and said, do away with arts and science streams. It's a false divide that only serves the ruling class.
I agree. We also have a tweet from Paul Lau who says that, you know, the class markers are also evident in the Malaysian community.
Right. As well, you know, they're obviously employing some Marxist rhetoric, you know, drawing that line between the haves and the have-nots. I get you, buddy. I get you. But then, you know, like, the word here, streaming, sometimes has a negative connotation there, right? Perhaps, you know, some can see it as specialization. I mean, now, there's an argument out there in academia that kids are being asked to specialize, you know, at too young an age. Secondary school, what do you know, about what you want to do for the rest of your lives, right? You know, do you just focus on the sciences or the arts? Perhaps that specialization term could be used. And yeah, granted, it could perhaps be delayed into later on in their education career.
We also have a message from Aris from RHB. Thank you so much for writing in, saying that I believe the assumption of being fluent in English, indicating one's intelligence, goes back to our division of students back then, where students who got the opportunity to go to English medium schools would tend to be more successful.
Right. And also the historical roots for these labels that we still use till this day. But does it make it right? And more importantly, are we able to look past all these shorthands that we see in Malaysian society? The shorthand being, oh, you speak English well? I must be smart for the la.
We also have a WhatsApp from Kyung who says, I'm able to write and speak English fluently, but I'm much more comfortable with my Malaysian-ish English though.
Yeah. So the question is whether, you know, other people who look at you use, you know, in, subconscious class markers and therefore label you slightly different. In fact, Keong also said a little bit earlier, definitely I will treat you different if you don't speak proper. So he's employing, I guess you're making your own point there.
Double standard, like you're open here.
Well, thank you everyone for weighing in on WhatsApp and Twitter. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. I just do want to say though, KLites, we have a new mayor. The Federal Territories Minister Khalid Samad introduced the new mayor, Datuk Nur Hisham Ahmad Dahlan, yesterday. He is now the 12th mayor of KL and is taking over from Amin Nordin Abdul Aziz, who I think was initially supposed to retire next year, but then he resigned at the beginning of last month.
Yeah, so Nur Hisham, who was born and raised in the city and was formerly the Subang Jaya Municipal Council president, brings with him a no-nonsense style of management. And he has promised to serve everyone in the city equally, regardless of race, religion or economic standing.
There you go. No class markers for him. He's saying that he will be open to any suggestion and criticism from city folk who want to make the capital a world-class city. So KLites, we're asking, what makes a world-class city?
Perhaps no traffic jams. I don't know, please. I
mean, no double parking?
I love KL. I really do. Every time I get to go in, into the city center, I love my time there, except for the time that I actually spend on the roads. It's just atrocious. But I'm sure those of you, you know, listening to this at 7 a.m., well, perhaps not so bad at 7 a.m. now, but give it half an hour and you'll start to see the traffic building
but
up.
But it's not just traffic, right? I think a world-class city is, for me, not so much the infrastructure, but really the people. So, I mean, you can have great infrastructure, but if the citizens are not civic-minded, what's the point, right? So, world-class, I mean, like BFM, building first-class mindsets, BFM, right? So, that's for me the idea of a world-class city.
Yeah, as well as perhaps things to draw people to the city, activities or even buildings or places to go.
All right, we also still, WhatsApps are coming in hard and fast this morning. So we have our newsreader, Lynn Mark, who tweeted in, who said that it's not just a matter of choosing specialization. A lot of kids choose the science stream because of the pressure from parents and teachers, and that science is for smart students. So the class divide begins quite young. Also, Tung of KL made a great point. The ability to converse in several languages is a mark of intelligence. So not just English, right? So if you're bilingual, multilingual, you're smart. You're super smart.
Yeah, or to carry a conversation.
Well, so again, right, this separation, like the wanting to be better than someone else, that starts from a very young age. Parents, bend over backwards to send their kids to the best preschools in the area, send them to the best private schools. The idea is to get a leg up over others. So inherently, you think there's some kind of marker of sorts just by doing that.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for your messages this morning. I do want to recommend that article. We've tweeted out a link. It's a great study in Singapore talking about the class divide. Let's see whether we can learn a lesson or two here in Malaysia. I'm handing it over now to Lynn Mark for the 7 o'clock Park News Bulletin. Over to you, Lynn. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.